Before we get started with today's show, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, SV Pod. Scott gets some of the best guests out there. In today's episode, he's chatting with Warriors head coach Steve Kerr about the passing of Kobe Bryant. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to SV Pod as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. 2020 is going to be the year you get it together, right? Join that gym, start that diet. Nah. But how about getting out of that job and into a career? A career in information technology. There are millions of unfilled cybersecurity positions in the U.S. right now, and My Computer Career is training people to help fill them. No IT experience or education? No problem. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You could start your new life as an information technology professional in months, not years. Attend classes on campus or live online just a few times a week to get what you'll need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hire our students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited and financial aid is available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so make new year, new career your resolution and take the free computer evaluation today at mycomputercareer.edu. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Kobe Bryant passed away on Sunday. One of those where you see it on Twitter and you got to make sure it's a verified TMZ account because it seems impossible to believe. And I guess by now, we're recording this on Tuesday morning. We've been through like a lot of the talking and stuff on it, so I don't really need to lay out the particulars for you necessarily. But I do want to read to you a tweet that somebody sent me that, of course, I railed on. But the dude said, I've been listening to you for years, and you've dedicated a chunk of your career hating on Kobe, so I don't feel this is genuine. I'm very impressed with the professionalism that you showed here. I can't say that about others in your profession. Now, if you listen to me for years, one thing you know about me is I ain't giving you shit that ain't genuine. All right? I was not a Kobe Bryant fan, but I also feel like if you listen to me over the years, the respect I had for him came through pretty clear. I always mentioned that. On television, I talked about how Kobe was the first person I ever talked to in a locker room and how petrified I was and how good he was about that. Like, I've always, the things that I thought were admirable about Kobe, I always talked about them being admirable. The things that I found to be infuriating and frustrating, I also said were infuriating and frustrating. Kobe dying hasn't caused me to do like some serious reevaluation of what I thought of his game and what I thought of him as a basketball player. But what it has done, well, I think I'm in a similar boat as this caller that we had. We opened up the voicemail lines for you guys to talk about Kobe, and we've never had as many people leave voicemails with us as we had with this. And let's go to this voicemail. The gentleman didn't leave a name, but check this out.
Hey, Bomani. I just wanted to call in. I guess I basically wanted to say that the first feeling I felt when I heard about Kobe's passing was one of confusion. And not so much at the events of what happened, but about how I was processing it. I think I've been sad and concerned and, you know, I care when I hear stories about, you know, passings of celebrities and famous people and, you know, anybody. But I don't think I've ever been really hurt in the way that I was yesterday when I heard about Kobe's passing. And that confused me. And it really made me feel like I need to, like, look inward. I don't know, man. I feel like Kobe, in a weird way, I never realize how profound an impact Kobe had on my life until he was gone. And I guess I just wanted to call him and just, you know, get that off my chest. And yeah, appreciate it, man.
Bruh, me too. Me too. I was just texting on my way in with a buddy of mine. And we said something very similar. Shannon and I have been texting over the course of the last couple of days about the same thing. He's busy with work. I wanted to try to get him in here to talk about this, because I do kind of feel like, I don't know if like a support group is necessary, but like there's a unique group of people in talking about this with in this COVID situation, which is those of us who didn't really rock with the dude like that, but have really been in a bit of a fog or a daze after he passed. Like this is not something that I would have seen coming. I'm not a person that really winds up being debilitated when people I don't know die. Like, it only does so much to me when people I do know die, you know? Like, I always look at it when celebrities die and stuff like this. I had to bury my best friend at 19. I had to bury one of my best friends, one of the most tragic situations that's ever happened in my life ever, about 6 years ago. Like, I've been there with like real miserable, cruel, unfair pain when people die. And so when famous people die, like, I hate to hear it, and it's like, it's a damn shame, but it doesn't, I'm not the person that's walking around in a daze for that reason. When Prince died, and maybe it was a little different because I was out of the country when that happened, but when Prince died, like, I remember my brother and I, because I was in Paris and he was in London. We were both traveling for work, and we got on FaceTime and we were just talking to each other, but we weren't like, I don't know if sad, we didn't feel sad about it. You know, we were just like, yo, this is crazy. And we talked about all this stuff, but it didn't hit us like in that sort of way. David Bowie died. It didn't hit me in that way. And those dudes like meant a lot to me. Their music meant a lot to me. And I guess what part of it with them was just kind of like the things about them that meant something to me. I already had those, and I was going to have those in perpetuity. You know, as long as somebody doesn't go hack the Spotify, we was going to be good. And with Kobe, you could kind of make the same argument. I mean, the basketball he played had already been played, and that's what we're here for, by and large, was the basketball. So, you know, this isn't one where it's like, man, I just wish I could have seen him play basketball again. I was never going to see him play basketball again. That wasn't going to be the case. And again, like I said, I didn't really rock with the dude, but this hit hard, right? Like, it didn't hit me, I don't want to say like a ton of bricks. It was much slower. Like, it's like I saw it and I was like, whoa. Like, it was just kind of that stun. Like, you see that clip of Cassius Winston when Tom Izzo comes up and tells him before the post-game interview, he's going to tell you that Kobe died, and you see him, he goes, Kobe? Kobe Bryant? Right? Like, it was like kind of a stunning thing that went from there. And I think that maybe part of it is that, like, after he died, then we start putting together, like, okay, he's in the helicopter. How many people are in the helicopter? And the first thing we'd heard is that five other people died in the helicopter, and you start counting on your fingers. You're like, yo, Kobe's got four kids. And you're like, okay, yeah, but the infant wouldn't have been there. There would have been somebody else there. One of those people would have been the pilot or whatever it is. And then we keep stacking it up. And so you convince yourself, you're like, okay, cool. Well, the kids weren't on there at least. And then we get a little bit more news, and then we find out that Gianna's 13-year-old daughter was there. And I think that kind of came to a more personal place, like, even for those of us who don't have children, like, that kind of took us to a place where it was just like, okay, so no matter what you thought about Kobe as a basketball player, no matter what that was, man, it's a 13-year-old dying, and just in a way that just seems so stunning, it just seems so awful. And then you find out it's 9 people, including Kobe and his daughter, who were on the helicopter. And I spent, man, I guess we're getting up to 48 hours now, but I spent a lot of time in a daze, man. And I had so many people who hit me up just like, yo, I just want to make sure that you're okay. And, you know, I'm not the type of person, at least I don't view myself in this way, I'm not the type of person that needs you to make sure that I'm okay after something like this. Because, again, this wasn't really a dude that I rock with, but I can't pretend like I was okay. I was not. I wasn't. Kobe is almost 2 years to the day older than me. He graduated from high school 1 year before I did. Like, this is a dude in a lot of ways that I remember basketball without him, but it's in a lot of ways like my brother's basketball. You know, he's 13 years older than me. Like, the basketball from before me, in a lot of ways, like, it's generationally separate. Kobe Kobe came in this space and at this time where I think maybe this is kind of it with Kobe. And I'll talk, you know, maybe about the particulars about this a little bit later. But I don't know if there's ever been a basketball player as good as Kobe who generated legitimately polarizing opinions in that way. Like, LeBron at a point was a polarizing figure, but he did enough to win people over. Like, what wound up being so polarizing about LeBron, I think for most people, was the gap between what they thought he was capable of and what he was actually producing. You know, 7 years in the league, you haven't won a championship. A dude that good, you look at it, you're like, yo, you should win a championship within 7 years. Okay, cool. But Kobe won a championship within four, right? Like, Kobe had three rings, and a lot of us were still back looking at him like, okay, but here's the thing, right? There was a lot of it that happened to be there. And it's wild because, like, you think about this. In terms of star basketball players, how many of them are legitimately polarizing? And Kobe was the dude who existed in that space. And this, again, is like before the Colorado situation that turned him, in the eyes of many, for reasons totally understandable, into a bit of a villain. Before we even get there, Kobe brought something out of people in that way. And now when I look at it, like, I know the things that bothered me about him as a basketball player, right? And I still stand by a lot of those things. But I look at what it was, or the way that I viewed this, like almost 20 years ago. And I don't know why. Like, it was something kind of visceral about it that came out. And something visceral came out about him on the other side. And so you really had camps on both sides when it came to him. And I guess now I've gotten older, right? Like I'm in a different place in my life. I have a different way of looking at him and at looking at these things. I could appreciate the hilarity of some of the things that I find to be absurd, but a part and parcel of who he is because of just the ridiculous competitive drive that he had and everything that kind of comes along with it. But this stung. This hurt. This still feels bad. And the gentleman who called and said that he's just kind of struggled to process it, I'm here too. I'm right here with you. And for all the people who are confused and surprised by the way that this has stunned you, I'm right here with you, right? I'm assuming that by now you know that you're not alone in this place, but I often feel like when people die, you get a lot of things that are like what the gentleman that I read the tweet from thought I was doing. You get a lot of stuff that's kind of disingenuous after people die, and everybody knows you're supposed to say something nice after people die, and then you kind of, you know, then you just kind of lean into it. But that wasn't what I was doing at all. Like, everything I've given you has been sincerely what I think. It's been sincerely what I feel. And I guess part of this is basketball, man. All right. We feel a more personal relationship with basketball players than we do with anyone else. When time starts to run out for basketball players, we deal with it and handle it in a way that is much different. This league has sold us individuals. This league has sold us personalities. This league has sold us these stars. They've given them to us, and we have taken them, and we have, you know, made them part of our lives. And I don't think it's really possible for somebody to engender this sort of reaction in this country that isn't a basketball player, because we don't know the other dudes the way that we know basketball players. We don't see everybody else's faces in the ways that we see basketball players' faces. And I think I didn't realize just how intimate the relationship between the NBA and its fans was until now, or even like how intimate the NBA's relationship, its players with each other. It all came through different because, man, these cats, they come up playing ball with each other for so long, since they were teenagers, right? Most of these guys, they've known each other their whole lives. Like Steven Jackson put up a picture on Instagram of him with Kobe at the 1996 McDonald's All-American game. And that picture really jumped out to me. And the reason was, I did not know Steven Jackson in 1996, but I had seen Steven Jackson around in 1996. And I am here to tell you, he and Kobe Bryant, they come from different places. They are not of the same world, right? And so one might think, when you look at Kobe, you know, just obviously upper middle class to rich kid. I'm not sure exactly how much money his people had, but they had some bread, right? He's out there living in the burbs in Philadelphia. And if you use some kind of lazy thought processes, you might assume, man, but these hood cats that's out here, man, they're not rocking with him. They're going to think he's this. They're going to think he's that, whatever it is. And Ron Artest, I remember him talking about how much he loved Kobe Bryant. And Steven Jackson said on there, he's like, yo, you're the only person I was ever scared to play against. And I'm thinking about like 1996 Steven Jackson hanging out with 1996 Kobe Bryant and what that had to be like. And it got me to thinking a little bit about Kobe. And I don't know if this is exactly the case. I'm doing some guessing here, but I think you'll understand where I'm coming from. And I don't think I'm saying anything that's necessarily unfair. You got a lot of cats, especially from that era of the NBA, who came from like some real, right? Like they had to really overcome whatever it was that they were, that they were from. They had to. And when you ask a lot of those dudes about their upbringings and things, what they'll tell you is, hey, man, but that's what made me. I wouldn't be as tough as I am if I hadn't come from this place. And I imagine that a lot of those dudes, at least initially, they look at Kobe Bryant. And they're like, yo, how tough can that dude be, right? Like, I came from all this. His dad played ball. He's over there in Italy, whatever else. How tough could that dude be? And then they got in the same space with him. They're like, oh, yeah, every bit as tough as us, if not tougher. He ain't scared of nothing, right? And so you take that cat and you look at him and you're like, all right, you know, I respect that. And then you look at him and you realize, man, most of those cats that I'm talking about, if they had a choice, they could have grown up like Kobe Bryant or they could have grown up like they did. Which choice you think they're taking? Every single one of them would rather grow up like Kobe Bryant did. And that then turns that cat into kind of like an aspirational figure. You can be this tough dude if you didn't necessarily come from this tough place. Like, I wonder if there's some dudes in the NBA that look at Kobe and they're like, because everybody that came up hard and then get some money, they all get worried that their kids are going to be soft, right? Like, that's an across the board thing. They all worry that their kids are going to be soft. I wonder how many of them then look at Kobe and they're like, no, you ain't got to be soft. Look at Kobe. He ain't got to be. It doesn't have to be that. And that's kind of an intimate observation. And I'm ascribing this to these people that may not actually think or feel these sorts of things. But from top to bottom on this, there was an intimacy to our relationship with Kobe Bryant. And intimacy does not necessarily mean that you like the dude. But it was there. And now that that guy is gone, that relationship, whatever it happened to be for you, is also gone. And I think a lot of us just kind of sit here, those of us who are not did not lose our favorite basketball player. We lost a hole because basketball is one of our favorite things. You know, Pablo, we did a TV show yesterday. He talked about how he realized that Kobe was like a character, you know, a very important character in his favorite TV show. And I think I realized that for me and for a lot of us, this ain't a TV show. This has been a real part of our lives. And a dude who we watched grow up and we're watching continue to grow up is now gone. And we know we don't know him. I don't even want to say it felt like I knew him. Right? Like, I was very aware of him and knew lots of things about him. But even without that, I feel like we grew up with him. It's like we all went to a great big old high school and this dude was the star athlete and then it was gone. But we never talked to him in the hall or anything like that. But this was part of our lives. And like in football, man, them dudes are disposable. They go in and out, right? That's just what it is. Baseball, not nearly as much. But basketball, we did a retirement tour for Dwayne Wade. And Dwayne Wade's a Hall of Fame player. We ain't doing that for a football player, right? The football player, I guess, also ain't telling you that he's retiring before the year. Like, that's just not what's going to go down. But we get to tell these cats goodbye. Like, everything about the way we feel about basketball players is different. And the intensity of our relationship with basketball players is such that it even feels this close with a guy who wasn't your favorite. But he was, especially for people of my age and generation, he was ours. And that's something that hurts a great deal to lose. We'll be back to talk more about Kobe Bryant in a minute, but first, it's a new year, the perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani makes it easy. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. We're going to go to another voicemail that we received. This is from Rich. I believe he's a self-described Kobe stan, and if not self-described, he just happens to be a Kobe stan. And hey, it's your day too.
I've been a fan of Kobe Bryant since 1997. I'm 30 years old, and I grew up my whole life, and this guy was my hero. And yesterday, I lost my hero. And a lot of, you know, I'm what you would call a Kobe stan. But the reason that we cheer for Kobe so hard, I just want everyone to know, is it always felt like, you know, we had to protect him. We had to, you know, you would never be Jordan. But he didn't have to be. He was Kobe. Then when LeBron came along, it was like they wanted to erase Kobe, and we would not let that happen. I finally feel like the world loves him. I'm hurt and broke up, and I just miss him. He'll always be the GOAT.
So that thought process, I was thinking about that on my way in here. And I realized, I think I'm going to try to write about this. But I realized something about Kobe and about being a basketball fan and how those things have kind of collided in this moment. And it touches on something that Rich just brought up. So here's the thing. You really kind of got like two ways that you do this basketball fan thing. You either got a team or you got a guy, right? Your guy can lead you into a team that you would not ordinarily be on. Like, if you got a team, you might have a guy, but you're not going to like root for, you're not going to be all in on the guy's team because the guy is over there, but right? You understand what I'm saying? Like, Kobe, for a lot of people, was their guy. You know, like LeBron's, you know, we got a new generation. We got to figure out how that goes, but you end up with like the LeBron guys, right? You got your Kobe guys, all that stuff. Cool. If I had to guess, that's an offshoot of the NBA's marketing of superstars. Like, this starts in the late 1970s in college and gets you to the NBA. I mean, it gets you to the 80s of the NBA, which is, were you a Magic guy or a Bird guy? And I mean, yeah, we kind of know how that line got split.
Yes, we do.
You know, I'll put it to you like this. Not every Magic guy was black, but every Bird guy was white. I ain't met a black person yet that said Larry Bird was my favorite player. I've met some black dudes who said that Larry Bird can ball, but I ain't seen a black dude once say Larry Bird was my favorite player. Hell, I don't think I saw a black dude in a Larry Bird jersey in Boston. You know, not really how it goes. But anyway, you could have a guy. And so this really got big, like, as you had, like, Jordan going in and out, because when Jordan was around, man, Jordan was kind of everybody's guy, right? Like, not every single person in the world, but Jordan, it wasn't even a plurality, right? If you ask basketball fans who was your guy, I would guess in the Jordan era, 50% of the people would say that Jordan was their guy. Okay, so Jordan leaves, and we've kind of got a vacuum of sorts. Jordan left the first time, and it happened to coincide with the rise of Shaq. And so Shaq in 1994, 1995 is the most popular player in the NBA, at least by my math. He's the one that we see in all the commercials and everything else, right? So Shaq was like the guy, but like he could be your guy, but you know, the old line, nobody roots for Goliath. You know, like there's limits to like being your guy that you'd have, but he was facing up against Olajuwon and stuff like that. And outside of Houston, Olajuwon wasn't anybody's guy because big men just don't move people in that same way. And so cool. 95, Jordan comes back. Jordan is the guy again. He stays for 3 years. He leaves in 98. We're going to act like the Wizards thing didn't happen for purposes of this discussion, and you'll understand. But 98, he's going away. So as Jordan's going away in 98, that, as I recall, is the first year that Kobe was voted an All-Star starter. Right. So now we have the rise of Kobe that is beginning. And then you get out there. Kobe's in the All-Star game, waving off screens, you know, because one thing about Kobe was Kobe always felt like whatever room he was in, he was supposed to be there. Ain't no imposter syndrome to Kobe Bryant. Right. It's one of the more impressive things about him is I am supposed to be here. Fine. No, I don't need no help around this. I got it. Right. Like that's what he's going to do. So now he is on that rise. And so Jordan leaves in 98. And now basically, we got a whole league full of dudes looking for their guy. A league full of fans looking for their guy. A lot of the Jordan folks then go to Kobe because Kobe was the most reasonable facsimile of Michael Jordan that there was. Like he was the first person post-Jordan that we looked at and saw so clearly what the Jordan influence was, right? And so now we got Kobe, right? He's that guy. One of the guys that people are looking at. So you got people that are adopting Kobe as their guy. But you know who else is a dude that people were adopting as their guy? Shaq. Shaq was another guy that people were adopting as their guy because he was the most dominant player in the NBA. Again, he was never going to be a Jordan type figure because he was a big man, but Shaq was a dude that people saw as their guy. I can't think of a situation where you wound up with two dudes who were really in the conversation as being the best player in the NBA, and they were on the same team, right? So like when Magic and Kareem were there at the same time, there was never a point where Magic and Kareem were both in legitimate discussion as being the best player in the NBA. Like that didn't happen. You didn't have to pick between your guy on the same team, right? So now we got, as you talk about, we have those Jordan guys. You got the Jordan folks that came and picked up Kobe as their guy, but then you got a significant number of them who then looked at Kobe as being kind of like a bootleg, watered-down version of Mike, and so that wasn't going to be their guy. And now you got these folks who pick Shaq as their guy. And Shaq is probably the best player in the NBA up until at least 2001, 2002. So if Shaq's your guy, and you can only have one guy, and part of having your one guy requires you to shit on anybody else that's anywhere close to where your guy is in the hierarchy. So now Kobe is going to get it from the people who ain't really rocking with him because they think he's a bootleg Jordan. And now you got the people who ain't going to really rock with him because Shaq is their guy and Kobe's not passing him the ball. Like it's not just they were just on the same team. They didn't like each other. So then you wind up with people that's got to pick sides on that beef within like Laker stuff, but then also just on the idea that this is your guy. All right. So now they have this title run and the whole thing ends at the end of 2004. Shaq gets traded. And now as that is happening, we are seeing the rise of LeBron. And as we're seeing that rise of LeBron, we're also looking at the Lakers in what for them at that point felt like the lowest period in their history. They missed the playoffs in 2005. They got eliminated in the first round in 2006 and in 2007. And in 2007, LeBron makes the NBA Finals. it's that summer that Kobe's asking for the trade, saying he wants to go to Pluto and everything else. But as this is going and LeBron's doing things that none of us had ever seen, like that 48-point game against Detroit, for example, right? And so Kobe's over here and it's like, man, but Kobe didn't have no teammates. LeBron didn't have no teammates and they went to the NBA Finals. So if Kobe is not your guy, now you're catching it from this other direction, right? You're catching it from over here. And so what I think that ultimately led to was guys like the dude, like Rich, who just called up. Because my homeboy used to say this. He was just like, yo, man, Kobe doesn't get no credit. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Kobe doesn't get any credit. Kobe makes the All-Star team every year. Kobe's in all these commercials. Like, I was just like, what do you mean Kobe doesn't get any credit? And he was just like, yo, we fight. And there's my homeboy Clarence. He was going to say this. He's like, yo, we fight so hard to protect Kobe because Kobe's getting it from all these different directions. And I didn't really get it until, like, really in these last couple days where I understood it. There was like a plurality of guys at this point, like who could be your guy. We had kind of a range of them in a little bit of a different way during Kobe's career. So Kobe's on the opposite side of the legend of Jordan. Kobe's on the opposite side of the dominance of Shaq. And by the way, it felt like on the opposite side of the dominance of the Lakers, because the dominance of the Lakers to a lot of us felt like it was Shaq, and Kobe's not really trying to participate in that one. So then he winds up on the opposite side of LeBron, and he's winding up on the opposite side of LeBron after his image has collapsed because of what happened in Colorado. I want to take a brief moment now to talk about the thing in Colorado. And I understand the people who say the man just died. Why are we even bringing this up? Because normally we give you a grace period after you die where we don't say like mean stuff about you, or we don't bring up the worst that you've done. It's custom, right? Like no matter what that thing happens to be, that's custom. That's what we typically do. Unless we know you, like, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald. I mean, I guess it's the same week, but Lee Harvey Oswald dies. Yeah, we're going to talk about him killing Kennedy. That's the thing we know about. With somebody like this, we're typically going to go about this in a different way. And I was talking to my producer, Eric Rodholm, on the TV show about this, and he was just like, look, here's the thing. And I think he's right about this. No matter what you think about what happened, no matter what you believe, there was a settlement in place, and we got to, at least in public, have to go off the words that he said. He believed that that was a consensual encounter. She did not believe that was a consensual encounter. And her belief is the one that matters. That's the one that's there. Kobe offered his apology there. Kobe offered some measure of apology immediately in the aftermath of the situation. There's no need to dismiss the fact that it happened, and there's no need to bristle at the idea that people would mention it at this time. There's also no need to litigate it. If you think there's any mystery to what happened, there is no need to do that. But you can't pretend that's not there. And if you've forgiven Kobe Bryant, it's fair to ask yourself whether or not you should be the person that's in the place to forgive him. Like, I think there's a lot of introspection that we can all do on that matter, but we can't just push it off. And you can't be mad at people like, yo, man, how y'all even gonna talk about that right now? Because you got to. You may not even necessarily have to talk about it for long, but you can't act like this didn't happen. Now, with that in mind, that's 2003 that happens. The summer of 2003, and then 2000, that season was the one where he was doing all the helicopter rides and stuff like that. And look, this is a different era. We wouldn't have been celebrating that, look how well he plays after going to court. We wouldn't be doing that in this day and age, nor should we. But you add all of that up, and Kobe is at a low point in the way that he's perceived by people as the next guy is rising. And that put him in this place where I talked about before about being so polarizing. And where Rich said, they kept saying he wasn't Jordan, he was Kobe, and that was good enough. The thing that I think happened after 2004 was the emulation of Jordan then stopped. No longer felt like a Be Like Mike commercial. I mean, so much of it was always going to be there because he put so much work into it. But the Be Like Mike part just kind of went away. And that is when he kind of became Kobe Bryant, right? He became the person that he was after that fact. But the reason so many people had to defend him is, oh, I forgot a big one. Talked about him being on the other side of like your guy being Jordan, your guy being Shaq, your guy being LeBron. Can you think of who the one is that I forgot? Allen Iverson.
Allen Iverson. Ooh, that's a good one.
And that ain't about basketball. You know what I mean? Like, if Iverson was your guy, it's not really a basketball thing that made Iverson your guy. But Kobe was on the complete other side of Allen Iverson on that. And Allen Iverson meant something cultural. Like, Allen Iverson, like, when Allen Iverson dies and he hits people, I'm going to know why, right? And I might be one of them. That's a different space. But Iverson was this unapologetic representation of what seemed to be hip-hop at that point in time, right? Like, Allen Iverson was the face of the children of the post-civil rights movement. He was the face of the people who grew up poor and all they wanted to fix was being poor because they had seen enough to let them know that putting on all them suits and all that stuff wasn't going to make you treat them that much better. Was it the Kanye line? To all them blacks cooking up that almost white because getting green make them treat us like we almost white? Almost. You know? These cats have figured out. If it was going to happen, it was going to happen because of that green. Meanwhile, you look over and Kobe's the dude that's already got the suit game tight and everything else. Kobe wound up on the other side of that. Like, you see how many significant movements that Kobe was on the other side of? And I can't think of anybody, literally anyone, who has been on the opposite side of so many things. And that leads to a place where a guy like Rich feels like he has to defend him. And now more than ever, I understand where you were coming from.
Yo, Bo, I hated Kobe, right? I started watching basketball when I was a kid, Jordan, and 32 now, so I'm about 9 years younger than Kobe. And I couldn't stand him when he came in the league, and he started playing, like actually playing. I was like, who is this kid? Just trying to be Jordan. He's a fake Jordan. He's Jordan. He's da-da-da. He thinks he's Jordan. And I'm just hitting me one day, like, I'm hating on him for trying to be Jordan, but he's doing what all of us try to do. But he was just damn good at it. And it's like, I couldn't really deny his greatness anymore. And it's like, I'm glad I did because I was able to, you know, I rooted against him in the finals against the Pacers, against the Sixers and the Nets. And I rooted for the Kings because, you know, I was wanting them to lose. But it got to the point where I was like, I just gotta, you know, stop being a hater and just appreciate the greatness. And it's like, since that point, I've been able to watch basketball at a different, like, in a different space. Like, I don't really dislike anybody in the league. I just watch it, and I just enjoy, and I just, you know, appreciate all the great players while they're here. Because when they're gone, they're gone, and you can't get those times back. And I really thank Kobe for that, and he became one of my favorite players. Once I started to look past, you know, all the, you know, all the talk about him, what he's trying to be and what he's trying to do, and just, he's just hooping, and he was just damn good at it.
Yo, that trying to be Jordan thing is interesting. We touched on it, you know, a couple times earlier in this. And I've been thinking more about this because I never held it against him so much that he was trying to be Jordan, right? Like, that was any angst I had about Kobe wasn't really caused by that, because what else would you try to be like? like, think about this for a second. Kobe was 6 years old when Jordan hit the league. Why wouldn't you try to be like Mike? Like, if there's somebody that you wanted to be like as a basketball player, the rest of us wanted to be like Mike. Like, that was a great point. The rest of us wanted to be like Mike. He was just a whole lot better at it. Because the thing about Mike was, and Sonny Vaccaro talks about this when he tried to get the Nike people on board with signing Mike. He's like, yo, man, this is the dude that everybody wants to be like. You put any clothes on him, they look good. Just look at how he walks up and down the floor and everything else. That is, I mean, like, for me, that is the coolest to ever play basketball. Like, in every way, whatever characteristic that you wanted a basketball player to embody aesthetically, Jordan had it. You like power, Jordan had that. You liked intensity, Jordan had that. You like to see somebody do something smooth, Jordan had that. You like to watch cats kill dudes on the dribble, Jordan had that. You like to watch ridiculous levels of athleticism, Jordan had that. You want the intense, fiery competitor, Jordan had that. There was nothing that you wanted to be as a basketball player that Michael Jordan didn't give you. And hey, man, I grew up in Houston. It was cats out there that wanted to play like Hakeem Olajuwon, but it was two dudes, man. There's two kinds of guys that really, like, you'd be out there and be like, damn, he really out here trying to be Olajuwon. It was really only two kinds of guys. Tall guys and Africans. Those are the ones. Those are the ones that was out there dream shaking. Do you know how annoying it is to play with a regular dude off the street trying to do a dream shake? You know how aggravating that is? You know what's even more aggravating? When that dream shake works on you being pulled off by some average regular dude. You're like, damn, how'd you do that? Anyway, but Jordan, yeah, you wanted to be like Mike. Like, just look at a clip of Michael Jordan walking on the court before a game. Like, that's the dude that you want to be. And I think that's also part of why Kobe's so popular with the generation that did not grow up with Michael Jordan, right? Because, like, if you are, like, see, you buy yourself at the house. People always talk about, like, shooting a sock into the basket or whatever it is. Okay, cool. If you buy yourself at the house and you're doing that, you can't do that like LeBron. You're going to run through your mama's wall, right? Oh, put the ball down on the wing. Oh, what a powerful dunk. You can't do that. Kobe, man, like long, lanky dudes and the spins and the shakes and everything else. You can put yourself in that place. Like, you don't need no virtual reality helmet for that, right? You got one inside your own brain that'll take you and let you do all those things right there. And that's what Kobe had. I can't knock him for trying to be like Jordan. I don't think anybody can knock him when you really look back at it for trying to be like Jordan. Because let me tell you, it's a bunch of other dudes in the NBA that was out here trying to be like Jordan too. They just couldn't get to a level that you noticed that what they were trying to do was trying to be like Jordan. They wasn't good enough for you to notice that they were trying to be like Jordan. And that is something really, until like the way he put it on that call, I hadn't quite thought about, was he's the one guy we knock for trying to be like Jordan in a league full of dudes who were influenced by Michael Jordan, because he's the only one that we really recognized as trying to be like Jordan, because you had to be that damn good for us to see that you were trying to be like Michael Jordan. Like, there it is right there. There it is. And the dude had a great career. And Deuce in San Antonio makes an interesting point here.
Hey, what's up, Bo? My name is Deuce. I'm calling from San Antonio by way of Georgia. I wasn't a Kobe fan, man. I'm an MJ guy, 33 years old. First memory of basketball was MJ, and I was super protective of my fandom of MJ. So I was a little put off by Kobe at first, man. Really protective of him, and his fans were really, really annoying sometimes too, so that made it even more easy to debate him. But over the time, he gained my respect, man, especially, you know, 2008, going up against the Celtics, my first time rooting for him. Fast forward past his career, and you see he's a father, and now I'm a father with a two-year-old daughter. And you see how much his daughter loved him. And, man, it just tears you up inside, man. The dude was great. And I feel like I spent a little bit too much time debating against him. I should have spent more time appreciating him, man. Dude was a great player, man. He was a great, great player, and it seemed like he was trying to be a great father and a great husband, man. Rest in peace to him and his daughter and everybody that was lost in that accident.
Hey, man, don't feel bad about them debates, man. The debates is fun as hell. Like, Gabe, you're a Kobe fan.
I am. It's been really hard for me to process this whole thing, because growing up in the Bay Area and then moving down to Southern California, spending the most of my life in California, Kobe's the most polarizing sports figure, I think, without a doubt. You either love to hate him or you loved him. It was just one or the other. There wasn't really someone who was kind of on the fence about him. And for me, it's like I was a Kings fan growing up, and he absolutely tore my heart out, you know, and killed my fandom for the Kings, because the team fell apart after that, you know, from top to bottom. Ownership, coach, players all shipped out of town, and that kind of coincided with me moving down to L.A., and all of my friends were from L.A., and all my friends were huge Kobe fans. So it kind of changed the way that I viewed him, and I was able to almost appreciate him in a different way than I did before. Instead of being such a hater, I could actually, like, grow to respect his game you know, like the other callers have said, like he was our Jordan. My like age group, he was basketball. As much as not being necessarily like a Kobe fan or like a Kobe stan, I can say that at the end of his like career, towards the end of it there, and I saw a game in his last season down at Staples that, and I, you could feel the love that started to rub off on me a little bit, you know?
Yeah. See, I think like for me is appreciation of Kobe. Here are moments that stand out to me. One, the 2010 finals against Boston, where they were down 3-2 coming back to L.A., and Woj wrote a story, and he was working at Yahoo, about how Kobe came into the locker room, and watching that game, this was correct, because for all the Kobe shoots too much, and Kobe does this, and Kobe does that, there were those moments where you're like, okay, I see why Kobe's doing this, and Kobe went in the locker room there and was like, look, I need somebody to stand with me, right? Like, whatever happens, we lose, whatever it is, but I'm here to fight, and I need some people to stand with me as I come and do this, right? Like, it's the all the rah-rah sports stuff I typically hate, but I remember watching that game five, and that was real, because he was the one who was standing. He was the one that was fighting, and those dudes didn't have it in them, right? At least in that moment. And then he was like, I remember that. And then I remember that year when Dwight and Steve Nash came, and they just couldn't get the thing going at all, and then it just, as the year he tore his Achilles. But he just basically got to a point where he was like, fine, I'll do everything, and basically did. Just went out there, ran point, whatever needed to be done, boom. He was the guy that was going to do it. Now, how much of that problem, you know, how many of these problems are caused by, like, the withering that happens when you deal with Kobe? That becomes its own question. But I remember to seeing that, I was just like, nah, man, this cat comes to ball in a different way. Like, that's when, for me, like, acknowledging the things that I respected about Kobe really came up. But I am glad we had all those debates and arguments about Kobe. I'd probably still be having them to this day. It just feels like poor taste right now. Maybe we can do it in a couple weeks. I still have some of these, right? Because one thing I'm also doing in the course of this is I'm still laughing at the stuff that I used to laugh at, right? I'm still laughing at Kobe when he's at his most corny, right? I'm still going to laugh at Mamba out. I will laugh at that one. Okay. How long is it going to be before we can start breaking out them pictures of him in that magazine? You know the pictures I'm talking about?
Oh, I remember. Some people have changed their Twitter photos to that or one of the photos from that spread.
Yeah, no. We're at that point because you know what? That's part of what made this fun with Kobe. No matter who you were, like the Kobe stans who are out here right now, you hear me talking about them pictures of him with that ridiculous hat on and you laughing because you were like, oh, Kobe, you're out here making our life hard right now. Why are you doing this? Because this was all part of the totality of who he was, right? This is the totality of the guy that we had. And a lot of that's fun. Like, I remember when Bobby Womack died. Gave me, you know who Bobby Womack is, do you?
You've mentioned him before, and I said that I didn't know.
Yeah, Bobby Womack, great soul singer, is a whole family full of Womacks. And basically, they kick it, like, you're not from a small town in this way, but they kick it like some cats in a small town where people be like, one of them Womacks, right? That was their get down. But Bobby Womack was notoriously grimy. Bobby Womack showed up to Sam Cooke's funeral with Sam Cooke's wife wearing one of Sam Cooke's suits. Then one of his brothers started, it's a lot with doing Womacks. Anyway, Bobby Womack died. We gave it about 15 minutes before we got in our jokes about Bobby Womack being Bobby Womack. Because it happens. That's what it was, you know? And with Kobe, part of the debates and everything else, because look, man, he was coming, he was trying to find his way in the NBA, like as a man, but in a different way than LeBron, because LeBron had already had his whole operation set up as to what it was going to be when he got there. Kobe was kind of figuring it out along the way. Like the way I put it is, Kobe came around before they had stylists to help you pick out your draft fit, you know? Like he was in a different place and he was in a different time. And so there were different kinds of stumbles that we saw from him. We saw him, you know, again, this dude's going from Italy and then Lower Merion High School. And now he's trying to figure out life in the NBA of the late 90s. You know, we saw all that, you know, we saw him put himself in positions where, yeah, I thought it was ridiculous that he was trying to rap at that time. You out here rapping in Italian. And that dude's like, yeah, I'm a rap in Italian, right? I'm gonna come out here and I'm going to do this. Still pretty funny that he was out here thinking we was going to listen to him rap in Italian. I wasn't going to listen to that. What are you, crazy? Must be, you know, it's ridiculous, right? But all those things are there. And so I don't feel like, because I actually have to say I did appreciate what he was as a basketball player. Like, I don't feel like I look back and I'm like, damn, I didn't know it at the time. No. I feel like I knew what it was. But all of this was a lot of fun, man. Like, in the end, as much as we want to make, you know, I think a lot of ways, you know, we talk about Kobe and his larger purpose and the hard work, you know, training, prayers, and vitamins, all that stuff. Yeah, that's cool. But in the end, man, we're here because this stuff was fun. And this stuff was a lot more fun because we had Kobe. And that brought us to these places of intimacy because we had Kobe. And let us not forget that we enjoyed this and that he enjoyed this. And while this is tragic, certainly, and this is something that nobody would want, all we can do in the aftermath is learn a little bit about ourselves and think a little bit about somebody else and think about the people that are in a lot more pain than any of us are in. So to Kobe, I say rest in peace. And to the rest of us, I say keep it moving.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from Tech.
This is Hannah Smothers, and I'm a senior staff writer at Vice. Last week, Tinder announced a whole new suite of safety features, like a photo verification system aimed at cutting down on catfishing, and an in-app safety center with links to various hotlines and helpful tips like, maybe don't give your home address out to a random match. The biggest new feature, though, is a panic button that, when pressed, basically functions as a silent alarm that contacts emergency services. Users who want the button will have to integrate Noonlight, a personal safety app, into their account, and anyone who opts in will have a little Noonlight badge on their profile, which a Tinder exec said is basically the same thing as putting a security system sign in your front lawn. The way this works is that, before a date, you'll put the time and place you plan to meet up in your Noonlight timeline, and then let the app track your location so emergency services know where to go if contacted. Tinder didn't address this in the press release announcing the safety features, but last year, Match Group, the company that owns Tinder, caught a lot of heat when a ProPublica investigation found that the company doesn't prevent known sexual offenders from joining most of its apps. Tinder's also been criticized for failing to do much of anything to make its service safer, which is mostly understandable. Dating violence and assault has existed for way longer than Tinder has, but Tinder definitely expedites the rate at which you can swipe on and meet up with random strangers. The panic button will roll out this week, and the rest of the features, like the photo verification system, are coming later on in 2020. Theoretically, all of this stuff will make going out on Tinder dates feel a lot safer, or, at the very least, that catfishing feature will cut down on the number of dudes whose bios are don't currently have the beard.
That's a great idea.
That is a great idea. To think that photos weren't verified before, that's a scary thought. People always say that if you're going on a date with someone you don't know, like, make sure and tell somebody where you're going.
Yes.
Like, someone that let your mom know,
right,
I'm going out here. If you don't hear from me by this time, this is kind of putting in all those protections that they probably should have.
Yeah, I tell you
this,
though, but now that they say they're going to do it, they better do it right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like as a company, like, just speaking purely cynically, you better off doing nothing than saying you're going to do it and then not do it. So if they're going to do this, they better make sure they are doing this right, because otherwise, because then people are going to start depending on it. You understand what I'm saying? And so when people start depending on it, then maybe they stop telling those other people. And then what happens if something happens?
All right, this next one also comes from Tech.
This is Josephine Wolf with Slate. Last week, the firm FTI Consulting shared a report alleging that Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, or MBS, was behind the hacking of Jeff Bezos's phone in 2018. Bezos asked FTI to perform the analysis after the National Enquirer attempted to blackmail the Amazon CEO last year using intimate photos and text messages. The report linked that breach to Saudi Arabia via a series of WhatsApp messages sent from MBS to Bezos after the two men met at a dinner in Los Angeles in April 2018 and exchanged numbers. On May 1st of that year, MBS sent Bezos an unsolicited video. And just hours after it was received, the amount of data being transmitted off of Bezos's phone increased by roughly 29,000%, according to FTI's analysis, leading the firm to conclude that the video file must have contained malware that was used to steal Bezos's data, despite the fact that they were unable to find any remaining traces of that malware. The report also highlighted a few unusual messages MBS sent Bezos, including a photo of a woman that was sent with the caption, "Arguing with a woman is like reading the software license agreement. In the end, you have to ignore everything and click I agree." The report alleged that this meme showed MBS had access to Bezos's private communications because the woman in the photo resembled Lauren Sanchez, with whom Bezos was having an affair at the time, and the caption implied MBS knew Bezos was discussing a divorce with his then wife. But why would Saudi Arabia infiltrate Bezos's phone in such a brazen way that could be so easily linked to a senior Saudi official? Why would MBS want to draw attention to what he had done by continuing to send Bezos Bezos' suspicious messages and memes, or by leaking stolen information about Bezos to the National Enquirer. The whole saga suggests that Saudi Arabia has a strangely blatant approach to cyber espionage and feels no need to cover its tracks. Either that, or MBS's WhatsApp account was compromised and he was framed by the real intruders who went out of their way to make it look like Saudi Arabia was behind the breach.
Yo, I cannot believe this dude did his own dirt. Like, why are you sending this yourself? That's what got me. Why are you sending this yourself? Wow. Wow. That has me shook, by the way. Don't send me nothing. Gabe, don't. If I don't open the link, it's because I don't trust you. I mean, you all right, but I'm just saying, man. That got your boy shook.
I mean, it's also like a tale of just how secure these social media, like, messaging apps are and are not.
Yes.
Like, I remember maybe it was a year back when WhatsApp was going to be purchased by Facebook, the integration of all the different messaging apps that people use that are going to be all owned by Facebook.
That. Yikes.
Even got your man Bezos.
Yeah, man.
All right, and this last one comes from Health.
I'm Bertha Coombs with CNBC. For all of the 24/7 connectedness via social, mobile, and email, it seems that a lot of us are feeling lonely, and young adults are feeling it the most, according to a new study from health insurer Cigna. This was the second year that the company looked at the impact of loneliness on working-age adults, and the numbers have gone up. They found that more than 60% of adults say they sometimes or always feel lonely. That's up 7 points from a year ago. And among Gen Z, folks aged 18 to 22, 73% feel alone. That's up from 69% a year ago. So what's making young people feel so much more alienated? Well, the survey shows that heavy social media use, being new on the job and in an entry-level position, also seem to correlate with feeling more alone. Workers who are older, been on the job longer, feel less lonely. And people who say they spend more time talking to others tend to feel less lonely too. Increasingly, healthcare companies are looking at how these social issues like loneliness impact our overall health. Cigna has been using the study to encourage companies to foster more interaction so their workers feel more included. And of course, as part of their business, they're also pushing for companies to provide more mental health access. The company has boosted its mobile mental health services, which do tend to appeal to younger folks because it can be more convenient and more private. But the bottom line for all of us is to make sure we talk to other people so we don't feel so alone.
Yeah, I think the big one past talking, we need to make sure we see other people. Like, all this technology allows us to, like, the illusion of company without actually seeing people, right? Like I say, we've downgraded the value of humanity. There's a value for each other that is beyond transactions. And we collectively, and I say we, I'm not putting myself out of this, we've collectively lost sight of that.
And it is an illusion, right? It is an illusion because at the end of the day, it's like you can feel like you have all this interaction with others, but at the end of the day, are you actually having a coffee with this person,
right?
having dinner with this person, going to have a beer with this person, sharing like intimate moments and intimate thoughts, emotional things that are close to you. Are you actually like sharing those things with someone else, or are you just kind of keeping it up inside?
Right. Interaction is not the same thing as connection.
100%.
And I think that's probably the best way to put it.
And what's interesting about it too, I think, is that our standards for like what you would call like a good friend or like a best friend or a close friend has risen along with this, because it's almost like you can get all of the kind of like little base level interactions with people on social media and just in passing.
Right.
But then you're like, oh, I reserve this secondary realm for my like good friends. And almost no one's reaching that anymore.
That's a great point.
Just me and my partner, me and my wife, me and my husband, what have you. Not stuck with them like you wouldn't want to be, you know, but it's like then that person ends up being your like best friend if you have that partner and not actually like a best friend.
It's kind of like we talk more and connect less, trust each other less than we ever had before.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. As you referenced earlier in the show, this was the most voicemails that we've ever gotten when we've opened up the lines. It was like 50 plus. So it was really hard to kind of, you know, fit all the best ones into the context of the show. We tried to do that the best way we could, in terms of using them in different segments throughout the show that were where they found relevance. We did have a couple others, though, that we wanted to play that I thought were all still good in their own right. This first one is from a Kings employee during the height of the rivalry with the Lakers.
Hey, Bomani. The year is 2004, and I used to work for the Sacramento Kings, and I was down on the floor for warm-ups, and I watched Kobe Bryant come out. I'm a 17-year-old kid living the dream working for the Kings, and I'm a Laker fan in Sacramento. I see Kobe come out, and I walk over to try and say hello. You know, dumb things 17-year-olds do. And he stares right through me like I'm not even there. And that's the first time I realized professionalism and excellence don't get turned off for distractions. And it's something that stayed with me for forever. So, sad day. Never going to be the same.
Kobe ain't even see you. Nah, he's such a big fan. He don't want to look at you. Just message with you, Kobe.
And we got the parallel opposite here with an absolute Kobe fan, Sean in L.A.
Once upon a time in 2010, and I was working the front office of a hotel. All the flights to LAX were canceled, and in walks Rajah Bell. Longtime Lakers fan, longtime Kobe fan. I immediately knew if I had a room or didn't, this man was not going to get it. So he came to the counter, and he says, hey, I'd like to check in. They'll have a room reservation. I was like, are you Rajah Bell? He said, yeah. And I said, nope, can't do it. Don't got a room for you. He laughed. He's like, you serious? I was like, yeah, man. We're sold out. Were we sold out? Nah. But that little bit, Kobe felt like all of us. And I think the reason this hits us hard is because Kobe made us all feel invincible. So appreciate you, Bo. Thanks.
Yeah, you felt invincible when you was the man with the rooms, huh? I figured Rajah Bell knew that there were rooms.
Yeah, and you wonder where that story went next, because it didn't seem like, did Rajah Bell leave the premises?
Right.
Did Rajah Bell ask to see a manager?
That's what I was about to say, where the manager at? Tell the manager to tell me y'all ain't got no rooms.
How he felt empowered to say no and to tell him to walk away.
Yes.
In L.A., right?
Yes.
All right, this last one comes from Supreme in Philly.
Bomani, what's going on? I just want to say Kobe impacted me and my career on a very direct and personal level. I saw his greatness, his work ethic, his attitude, his demeanor, and I strive to mirror that nuance of his greatness and apply it on my path in order to make me great. I always consider myself Kobe in the kitchen and had that Kobe mentality when it came to the kitchen and doing what I did. I have lofty and grandiose goals of being the best chef that this world has ever seen when it comes to vegan food. And it's because of Kobe Bryant and the work he showed me that I can have that manifest and have the path and the tool needed to make that happen and then show it to my children and grandchildren. So thank you. The mama mentality will forever live in me and live in the Dow family just in general.
Amen. And thank you. And thank you to everyone who shared with us your thoughts. We greatly appreciate it. Thanks to everybody who shared their ears with us on this today. We appreciate it. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsors, My Computer Career and ZipRecruiter. Thanks to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Hannah Smothers at Vice. Check out her story on Tinder trying to get catfish problems under control. Thanks to Josephine Wolf. Check out her story at Slate on Jeff Bezos having his phone hacked by the Saudi Crown Prince. And thanks to Bertha Coombs of CNBC. Check out her story on Americans being more lonely. And sorry, thank you to Kobe Bryant. Subscribe to The Right Time wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we will talk to you in a couple of days. Thank you.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.